It was 2019. I was 32. I had always known, but never accepted. I started having flashbacks, real visceral flashbacks, nightmares. I was waking up from dreams that felt more like hauntings. My body remembered what my mind tried to make me forget. Welcome to the Unpacking Lab, a space where we get raw, real, and reflective. I'm your host, Zan, and this is where we unpack the heavy stuff, piece by piece, memory by memory, no filter, no fluff. And this is for anybody who ever has felt like their mind is a suitcase that's been packed and left in the closet for too long. So let's unzip that thing together, okay? I was groomed at the playground. I was trying to make friends to feel seen. That need was used against me. I was gang essayed as a child between the ages of 4 and 5, and my brain did what it had to do to survive. It took me out of my body. I just remember floating out of my body and looking down as it happened. I now know that that experience is called dissociation. It's when you feel like you're not there anymore, or you're looking at things from a different vantage point. These flashbacks and memories started to become more frequent, more intense. It was around that time that I went from knowing that this happened to accepting that it happened. That is what has ultimately led me here. ER visits, thinking that I was dying, panic attacks, misdiagnosed as cardiac episodes. I finally sought out behavioral help. I had already had a standing diagnosis of generalized anxiety disorder, but this was next level. And then came COVID, and I am one of those unfortunate souls who developed long COVID, which I still have not fully recovered from, and which completely changed my life. Most people don't really understand how deep trauma goes. It literally rewires your brain. I did not learn to acknowledge it. I chose to. Because trauma does not ask for your permission. It comes out one way or the other, whether in your body, your relationships, in your sleep. For years, I told myself that these events were just something bad that happened. I didn't let myself understand what it really meant, what it means to be assaulted in that way. Terrible at any time, but at 4 years old, that avoidance, I think in a way protected me, but there is no way that that level of trauma does not affect you. I decided to create the Unpacking Lab because I realized that trauma will dump. It has to. So why not create a place where it can be done safely, creatively, and truthfully? There is a famous voice in the world of psychiatry, psychology, whatever you want to call it, but he said, whatever you resist persists. So let's stop resisting and let's start unpacking. I want to move into the official first segment of the Unpacking Lab. Right, let's get into it. So today I want to talk about something that really shaped my life and delayed my healing for years, hence the title, and that is generational miseducation. If I had known the truth about some of the things I was taught growing up, I could have made much better decisions and maybe healed a lot of things a lot sooner. There were many lies and half-truths that were passed down to us generation after generation. I am what has been effectively coined an elder millennial. I'm 39. I'm not really talking about outright malicious lies. For the most part, they were not intentional. There are these kinds of myths and belief systems that we were sold about life and success and relationships and even our own emotions. A lot of what we were told just simply did not work. And it definitely did not prepare us for this new world that we're living in now. So what I want to do today is unpack 10 lies that I was taught and how they affected me. And I'm going to guess many of you as well. Generational lie number one, work hard and the payday is coming. I remember when I first found out how much teachers made. Now I'm talking back in the late 90s, maybe 98 or 99. I was still a kid, but even then I had a sense that something wasn't adding up. I'd always heard how important teachers were, and I personally believed that myself. I heard how much they sacrificed, and I heard and saw how hard they worked. And I was lucky enough to have some legendary teachers. And then one day I saw a number, 24,000, as in $24,000 a year. That was their starting pay. Now, true enough, this was the late 90s, but that was a dismal number even at that time. And I had enough sense to know it. Today, in Mississippi, which is where I grew up, a brand new teacher starts somewhere between $41,000 and $45,000, depending on their certifications. That is barely a living wage in today's world. The truth is, work doesn't always equal wealth or success. A lot of low-income and very low-income laborers work very hard. And it is an insult to suggest that they don't. And these people, many of them still cannot make ends meet, not even close. I think we should stop gaslighting people. You are not lazy just because you're broke, and you are not a failure just because your job is not paying off the way you were told that it would. Some of y'all are breaking your backs for companies that don't even give you a proper lunch break. The dream they sold us was edited, and that is not your fault. Let me know in the comments or however you're tuning in. Did you inherit the hard work pays off mindset? Do you agree with me? Do you disagree? Did you ever feel betrayed by it? Or maybe you still believe it. Let's talk about it. There is no shame. Let's just have a conversation. Generational lie number two, college equals success. Ah, this is a classic. Yes, it's overdone. But it must be mentioned because it is just so profoundly true. And it's such a defining trope for our generation. While there are certainly examples of formal education directly leading to success, it is not the norm. And it simply is just not true as a blanket statement. I mean, we all know that by now. I graduated from college with a degree in an allied health profession, medical laboratory science, and I ended up getting a job offer where I did my internship. This was back in 2010, 2010, and my yearly pay was $39,996 annually, or $18.93 an hour. Now, anyone who is familiar with this field or actually went into this field at that time knows that this was one of the most rigorous undergraduate curricula in the collegiate world, probably only surpassed by engineering or something closely related to engineering. I was disgusted. I felt like I had been completely lied to and misled about life in general at that point. Where were all those sexy apartments and sleek cars and luxury vacations and weekend trips, the high fashion wardrobe? Cause that's what was on TV. That is what my parents and elders led me to believe was my reward. And yes, my immediate reward. It's not like I just, you know, went to college one day and woke up and I was out. You know, there was a lot of time and effort that went into actually getting that piece of paper. And I damn sure didn't go to college just to say I went or to say I had a degree. What I will say is that, at least in my field, I did see a decent rate of growth in my pay year by year before I became a stay-at-home mom. By year three, I was making about $56,000 annually, and that was due to multiple factors. I had gotten married, so I was able to select an option called pay in lieu of benefits, which was an additional $4 per hour. And I moved to second shift, which was an additional $2.25 per hour. And that was on top of my annual pay raises, which due to performance, I always maximized. But I'm also aware that that is not a normal rate of increase. But the cost of living even then was very prohibitive at that salary. It certainly was not what I envisioned, and more notably, not what I was sold. But I do still believe, for a select few people and a select few areas, that college can be a good tool if used strategically. I think strategy is the name of the game across the board. Generational lie number three. Prince Charming is coming because you're a good girl from a good family. So let me speak directly to the ladies on this one. I want to start by saying that I am married now, and I only had a couple of dating experiences before meeting my husband. But even with that relatively short dating history, I saw enough. What I didn't see growing up was the truth as I experienced it in my day in the dating pool. My family, and honestly the media too, sold me a very curated story about love, courtship, and how men and women actually interact. I really believed that because of how I grew up and the kind of person that I was immune to certain things, that certain things just could not and would not happen to me. I believed I was immune to betrayal. I was immune to dishonesty. I was immune to being used. I was immune to being manipulated simply because I was the good girl. I came from a solid middle-class Black family. I was raised right. I was respectful. I didn't play games. No, I am by no means saying or suggesting that I was perfect. I really should not have to give that disclaimer, but I will. But I genuinely was a solid person with good intentions.
Maybe not.
No one pulled me to the side and said, "Baby, just being good will not protect you. You need wisdom, you need discernment, you need game." Being a good person is a beautiful thing. It's admirable. It feels pretty good most of the time, but it does not guarantee protection. It does not guarantee respect. And it does not guarantee love, not in this world, especially in relationships. And I'm speaking specifically towards romantic relationships here. I had to unlearn the fairy tales and realize that relationships, even healthy ones, are very complex. Relationships are not easy. You have to choose to be with your partner day in and day out. There will always be a reason to leave. If you've been together 15, 20, 25 plus years, there has been a reason to leave. It doesn't always have to come down to abuse or someone having been unfaithful. People bring in baggage, insecurities, hidden motives, emotional wounds, and sometimes, yes, just flat out bad behavior. Love did not come in the package that I expected. And that sweet, nice girl energy without boundaries, it makes you a magnet for manipulation. Parents, especially mamas and aunties, because I can only speak from a woman's perspective, please teach your daughters the truth about love and about people. Not just abstinence, which I want to say I actually do advocate for. Shoot me. Not just pray about it, and definitely not just keep your legs closed and everything will fall into place, but teach them how to see red flags. Teach them that nice does not mean safe. And please, for the love of the good Lord, teach them the game, because people will run it on your daughters if you don't. Now, let me clarify that by game, I do not mean toying with people or manipulating people. I simply mean that people are going to be people. There are behavioral patterns that you need to recognize and react to accordingly. And this is akin to gameplay. And hit dogs holler. If you are not one of the people out here trying to hurt people, the notion of a well-taught, well-aware person who is not susceptible to these things should not trigger you. Were you raised to believe that being good was some sort of armor? And what lessons about relationships do you wish someone had told you? Generational lie number 4. Fiction is stranger than truth. Well, I will not dig too deep into this one, but I think many of us have seen just how crazy reality has gotten in the new age, and it looks like it will only get crazier. Epstein, true. COVID, a mess. Diddy, rumored for years, coming to the light. Made in China disclosures. Our recent presidential choices. Is this really the best we can do? This is not a conspiracy channel, and I don't want it to be, but questioning established norms is becoming more and more accepted, and I think that's okay. And let's just speak on those made in China disclosures briefly. If you have not heard, just this week, in retaliation for Trump-era tariffs, a wave of Chinese industrial manufacturers began publicly confirming what many of us have always suspected, that tons of name brand and luxury products are entirely made in China and then packaged and labeled elsewhere so that they can legally say made in Italy or made in France or whatever else carries more status. We all know that made in China is associated with being low value or cheap or off-brand. But yes, even ultra-luxury brands like Hermes. This means that a $50,000 Birkin bag could have been manufactured in a Chinese factory for $30, $40 and then rebranded, tagged, and sold as luxury. The same bag, the same batch, the same stitching, different packaging. And here's the kicker. You can even buy the same exact bag directly from these factories in China. We were miseducated on more than just facts and figures. We were miseducated on trust. We were taught to feel suspicious of those who asked questions, and even to feel that that was dangerous. It feels good to be living in a time where skepticism is no longer a fringe thing. It's even necessary. Question: what is one conspiracy or unbelievable truth that made you stop and rethink everything? When did you first realize that the official story was not always the real one? And what did you do with that new awareness? Did you chase it down, or did you protect your peace and step back and go on as usual? Comment down below. Generational lie number 5. There's a good side and a bad side politically. Okay, so let's be honest. It is the same song and dance every election. I am Black, African American, FBA, whatever your preference is. I'm from the Deep South, and I was taught vote blue no matter who. And I'm sure many people from this demographic were taught the same. I was always an old soul, and even as a kid, I was looking around like, wait a minute, are y'all sure this is the team you want to be on? I saw my parents, church folks, aunties, and uncles all identifying as Democrat, as liberal, but living and believing more like conservatives. And it wasn't really about labels, it was about contradictions. No, this is not going in the direction of advocating for Black folks to vote Republican. So if you're getting worried or happy about that, you might as well move on to the next thing. I'm simply speaking on my past experience. I now know that those terms, conservative, for instance, don't really mean anything. They're not really about values anymore. They're just about teams, identity politics, ego, and votes. Question: have you ever realized that your political identity didn't really align with your real beliefs or values? What made you start questioning that? Drop your thoughts in the comments. Generational lie number 6. You will learn about finances intuitively. I vividly remember growing up hearing, you'll figure it out, you'll learn about money as you go. I even remember my daddy getting very upset with me when I pointed out that neither he nor my mom had ever actually taught me anything about finances. And after that, I never asked again. When it comes to the idea of learning finances intuitively, no, you won't. Money management was just not something that we talked about openly, and it was not something that came naturally. Of course, there are always exceptions. We saw people hustling, we saw people grinding, but the actual how-to and the science of finances was really a mystery. The talk was always about working hard and saving up, but there was no real conversation about building wealth, making investments, managing debt, understanding tax codes. Learn as you go and trial by error. That is a one-way ticket to racking up high interest debt and wondering why your paychecks are not stretching the way you need them to. I remember getting out of school and working my first full-time job and looking at my paychecks like, wait a minute now. This is the big payday I was promised. My first job, as I said before, was in medical laboratory science, and it was a rigorous field, considering that it was a bachelor's degree, and I barely made $40,000 a year. I was not happy with that. The idea of simply saving up was not only outdated, but it was flat out wrong. Generational lie number 7. Family members should get specialized passes. You may want to get your popcorn for this one. So you've probably heard a plethora of excuses for bad behavior when it comes to family. Some family members hand out passes like church candy, and these passes give certain family members free rein to do whatever they want without consequences. These passes allow them to get away with toxic behaviors, and they are the proverbial building blocks of many generational curses. Now, I call these family passes because they are treated like a kind of get out of jail free card. But here's the thing. No one should get a pass for mistreatment just because they share your last name or your blood. And I'm going to lay out some of the most abused passes of them all. I'm sure most of you are familiar with these. Number one, the asshole pass. This is the golden ticket for family members to act like complete jerks and get away with it just because they're family. Bad behavior? No problem. They are family after all. Number two, the bitch pass. This is the all-access pass that allows someone to be rude, condescending, or downright nasty and still be treated with respect because they're family. Apparently, being a bitch is only a problem when you're outside the bloodline. Number three, the sorry ass Negro pass. Gender neutral.
I beat the game!
This pass is given to family members who repeatedly fail, underperform, or cause problems, but are excused from accountability just because they share the same last name. You know the type. Always sorry, but never sorry enough to change. Number four, the Bible pass.
Said I got that pass, the Bible pass.
The get-out-of-jail-free card for those who hide behind religious teachings to justify any behavior. It's like pulling out the Bible and saying, I'm doing this for God, while making excuses for actions that don't exactly align with what's actually in there. This pass is frequently used to excuse manipulation and emotional abuse. Number five.
The PDF file pass.
They'll never believe it's me.
The pass says it all. It says I know what I'm doing and I know it's wrong, but I'm going to rely on the culture of secrecy to protect me and gaslight you to high hell, especially if I'm the golden boy or golden girl. Number six.
Intrafamilial relations pass.
With your uncle and your cousin, do ain't nobody's business. Yes, I said it. This disturbing pass is where a family member gets away with illegal and inappropriate behavior involving close relatives, and no one says a word. It's not just swept under the rug, it's buried so deep, nobody even wants to ask why. While closely related to the pass, this can be given among consenting adults. Number seven, the I'm grown pass. This magical pass is for family members who feel that they can do whatever they want because I'm grown and you can't tell me nothing. It's the adult version of I don't have to listen to you, but with way less accountability. And at number eight, we have an honorable mention and really the most sinister pass of them all.
The we know he or she is a PDF file, and we ain't gonna say nothing pass.
This pass allows everyone in the family to turn a blind eye to unspeakable behaviors. It enables a predator to stay in the family circle while others just don't talk about it. You know the truth. Everyone knows the truth. But somehow, that's just Uncle Ray Ray. All parties pretend like nothing happened in order to keep the peace. But the truth is still there. The only thing that has been truly silenced is justice. Question: have you encountered any of these family passes in your own family? How did you handle it? And what would you do differently now? Did I miss any passes? Let me know in the comment. Generational lie number 8. You are not allowed to be angry or have valid feelings as a child or minor. This one hits home because it ties to how emotional invalidation works. Many of us were taught from a young age, especially in the South, that feelings and expressions were often to be dismissed or minimized, particularly in children. You were told to stop that crying or you don't have a reason to be upset. This goes beyond tough love when it's just chronically done over and over and over again. This is an entire cultural and familial dynamic where feelings, especially negative ones, like anger and frustrations, are considered a sign of weakness or they're something to be annoyed by or scoffed at. Generational lie number 9. A sibling's age should determine how they're treated, what they're allowed to express, and what's expected of them. All right, now let me be clear here. Age-appropriate expectations, conversations, and consequences are very much necessary. I am not saying that we treat a 7-year-old the same way we treat a 17-year-old. That would be complete and utter foolishness. So I am not talking about age-appropriate expectation. What I am talking about is this emotional hierarchy that many people are raised in based on age and based on where they fall in the age hierarchy, so to speak. This belief system that your age within the sibling lineup determines your worth, your rights, and your role in the family, that the oldest should know better, and that the baby doesn't know any better, and that the middle child should just stay out of the way and be easy. That's what we're unpacking with number 9 here. Because in a lot of families, birth order becomes this doctrine. It becomes a lens through which everything is judged in the child-rearing practices. It often becomes an excuse for unhealed trauma and unchecked favoritism. Let's keep it real. The oldest becomes a third parent. They get the weight, the responsibility, the pressure. They're expected to lead without being taught how. They were expected to protect without being protected. They were expected to know better, even if they didn't really have a chance to learn. They may become hyper-responsible and self-sacrificing and emotionally suppressed all at the same time. On the surface, some of these characteristics may seem positive, but every child deserves the chance to go through all of the evolutions of brain development that a human being is meant to go through. A 12-year-old deserves to be a 12-year-old. A 15-year-old deserves to be a 15-year-old and not have to bypass that to be 20 or 25. I think in bypassing that, you can develop a lot of problems. The fact is, they do struggle. When they cry, when they break down or lash out, a lot of times the eldest child is met with shame because they're too old to be doing all that, or they're supposed to be the strong one. But their age does not equal immunity from pain. Now let's talk about the middle child. A lot of what middle children grow up with is this quiet grief. They weren't given the same level of praise or pressure. They were often just told to be easy and to not make waves and just kind of stay out of the way. And a lot of them even get to that place on their own, where they decide to just stay out of the way on their own. They become peacekeepers. They learn not to need much. They become emotional minimalists because they don't really believe anyone will notice that they're there. And now for the baby. the protected baby. They're protected even when they're wrong. And this one is tricky because, yes, you know, everyone wants to protect their children. But when you protect a child to the point of being delusional, or were they just not facing consequences the way that they should, where there's always excuses, or where everyone else is blamed, you're not really protecting them. You are setting them up to have unrealistic expectations about actions and consequences. You're creating a person who never really learns to self-correct, and you may even be creating a manipulator. The truth is, a lot of these babies can carry deep guilt, even if they don't say it out loud, because they know they were treated differently. And they see how it hurt their siblings, and they know they can't really undo it. And the wild part is that most parents have no idea that they're doing this.
Generational lie number 10. The mask is a healthy and appropriate way to deal with trauma. This is a big one. This is another one you might want to get your popcorn for. This lie encompasses many sub-lies within the lie. You're stronger if no one sees you break. If you take off the mask, people won't love you. If the mask is working, there's no need to take it off, right? But behind the scenes, your sleep is trash. Your blood pressure looks like oven numbers. You don't really feel safe with anyone. Your body is breaking down. And when your body starts to break down, it's really over at that point. You start to see problems that you never thought you would have. I remember a few months ago, I was unapologetically scrolling after the kids went to sleep, and I came across a woman who was telling her story about struggling with body odor. Now, I know why this popped up in my feed. I have a 13-year-old son whose body odor had recently evolved. It had reached a new level, and it was pretty strong. I mean, at first he was coming home smelling like tacos, and I could deal with that. But suddenly it was just this full-on grown man working out in the field kind of odor. So yeah, I had been searching for suggestions to hit that from different angles. In addition to, of course, daily showers and deodorant, I wanted him to be good. This, of course, leads to me getting all kinds of material on my feed about body odor. So back to this woman aforementioned. She actually had an issue with smelling like feces, and she was dead serious. She spoke about how it had been years of her trying to deal with this, trying to find a cause and a solution, even just a solution at that point. It turns out she had had a traumatic event, and she had never tied her developing this odor to that event, even though this had happened around the same time. So long story short, she started, you know, strategically dealing with her stress levels and with her trauma, and the issue went away as she dealt with it. So, of course, me being me, I went down the rabbit hole with this. First off, I found that there are people who have issues with fecal odor. It is a thing. There are studies that have been done. One in particular that I read by Gilbert and friends that found that sweat secreted from different glands has different compositions. And this is widely known at this point. I just didn't know it. There's a type of gland called an eccrine gland, and it's triggered by heat. The sweat from this gland has a low odor intensity. It is composed of mostly water and salts. There is another type of sweat gland called an apocrine gland that is triggered by stress much of the time. It has a much higher odor intensity, and it is composed of fatty proteins, and it's just a much more nutrient-dense fluid, which provides the perfect environment for bacteria to feed. So just a little background information there. All right, but getting back to the depth and the breadth of number 10 on the list of generational lies, I came up with this idea to do another list, and people love lists. And I want to talk about some of the masks that people wear. I'm going to do, let's do five.
Take off the mask.
Five masks that people wear. Cool Auntie Avis. She's the one that knows about TikTok before the kids do. Her nails are always done. Edge is always laid. She's always got a little flask in her bag. Somewhere between being the strong friend and the family's unpaid therapist, she's just tired of being disappointed. She's not cool because she wants to be. She's cool because she's tired. Because if she ever told the truth about how lonely she really feels, or how she wishes somebody would show up for her the way she shows up for everybody else, that whole facade would collapse. But hey, as long as she brings the drinks and the jokes and the good times, it's all good, right? It's all good, right? Mask number two. Ain't tripping Tony. Tony has the kind of calm that can make you feel like she has it all together. She's unbothered. She sips her tea like peace was born in her palms. You could tell her man cheated and she would shrug it off like, girl, he was never mine to begin with. But here's the secret. Tony has been numb for so long, she has mistaken numbness for strength. The first time she cried in public, she was probably 7 or 8, and her mama probably slapped the tears off her face and said something to the effect of, stop all that noise before I give you something to cry about. So she just doesn't cry at all now. She just folds laundry, pays bills, smiles, takes care of her friends, plans baby showers. All the while, her chest is locked, her trunk is stuffed with all the things she will not allow herself to feel.
Mask number three, don't give a damn Debbie. Debbie has found freedom in the mantra, I don't give a damn. Or at least that's what she tells herself. She wears it like armor, convinced it's her ticket to liberation. Not needing anyone, not caring what anyone thinks. That is the ultimate power. To be untouchable and unbothered. But the truth is, Debbie does care. If she really didn't care, she would not feel the need to shout that from the rooftops, would she? She wouldn't have to keep repeating it like a defense mechanism, and she wouldn't have to keep telling herself and everyone around her that she's over it. She does care, and she cares deeply, but people have hurt her. She's been let down, rejected, and in that pain, she has built boundaries. Debbie has built a damn fortress. Healthy boundaries are always necessary, but somewhere along the way, boundaries can turn into walls. Debbie doesn't just keep people out, she has locked herself in. Her need for affirmation isn't toxic. It's actually human. She's starving for validation, just like most of us. But instead of asking for it, instead of nurturing healthy connections and relationships, she's convinced herself that she doesn't need anyone at all. If people can't love her the way she wants, then she'll shut them all out. And in her mind, that's strength, that's freedom, and that's control. But in reality, that control is a lie. She's not free, she's isolated. Her fortress might keep the hurt out, but it also keeps good things out too. The love, the support, and the affirmations that she's denying herself. A closed mouth don't get fed, and a fortress can become a prison. Debbie doesn't know how to ask for what she needs or what she wants. She's so busy defending herself that she stopped receiving, but she will never admit it. Mask number four, BB the Baddie. BB is stuck in a live-action exercise of maladaptive daydreaming. It's like she's playing out a fantasy in her head, one that never quite matches reality. Everyone has seen it. That same hairstyle, the same exaggerated makeup, the same bodycon dresses, the same big booties, lace fronts. Now, these things individually are really not a news story. Everyone has the right to look and dress as they please. But with BB, it's all a performance. It's a persona being built brick by brick. But for what? What's the end goal here? Validation? Love? Attention? BB is living out a childhood fantasy, trying to embody something that was never meant to be. This perfect version of herself that will finally get her all the love and admiration that she deserves. But it's all a facade. And when it doesn't work, when the likes don't satisfy, when the BBLs don't solve the loneliness, that's when desperation kicks in. She doubles down, unable to accept failure. I have to make this work, she tells herself. I can't walk away. So is more makeup, more bundles, more waist training, more surgery, more hypersexuality, more everything, more, more, and more. A bigger butt, maybe, fuller lips, a smaller nose. Whatever it takes to keep this dream alive. But in the end of it all, BB is still BB. She's still getting dogged out, still getting cheated on, still dealing with the real world, particularly when it comes to dealing with certain types of men, STDs, constant competition, and the nagging realization that there is always someone younger, better looking, or more successful. No matter how much she posts on Instagram, no matter how many surgeries she gets, no matter how many filters she uses, she cannot escape the truth. She's stuck in a cycle, trying to maintain an illusion that's doing more harm than good. But the question remains, what happens when she finally takes off the mask? What happens when BB realizes that the love she's been seeking has to come from within? Because no amount of makeup, surgery, or IG validation is ever going to change that. Mask number 5, Phantom Phoenix. Phantom Phoenix didn't start this way. He started small, overlooked, unchosen, invisible in a loud world. Maybe he was the kid picked last, or the boy no one texted back, or the man who never felt man enough. In a culture with a warped definition of strength, shame was the spark, rejection was the gasoline. And instead of tending to the fire, he let it consume his self-worth until all that was left was a bitter kind of ash. But ashes alone don't make you a phoenix. You need actual transformation, healing, and he skipped that part. Instead, he made a shortcut, reinvention through projection. He put on a mask, he logged in, and he rose. No face, no name, but endless opinions. You'll find him in the comments before you find him in real life. A meme, an avatar, a throwaway handle. He weaponizes truth. He claims to be logical. He feeds off of reaction. If you're upset, he wins. If you block him, he brags. He's hyper-focused on women, weight, and worth. He targets joy and confidence in others because these are things that trigger the void in him. He projects strength, but avoids mirrors. He critiques what he fears becoming, or what he already is. This is his fire. Control without connection. Power without presence. He doesn't want conversation. He wants combustion. The sad thing is, Phoenix could actually rise. But it ain't gonna happen in the comments. All right, so I'll start by acknowledging that there's a bit of a gender disparity on this list. Please don't take that the wrong way. I am a woman, so everything is going to be filtered through that lens, and that's the perspective that I'm naturally going to come from. But I did come up with one more mask that I have come across time and time again that is a male prototype. Meet Never Gonna Change Nelson. Nelson is an older guy from the Deep South, 60 plus, who has been living life by one rule. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And trust me when I say, Nelson has a stubborn streak that is as wide as the Mississippi River. He's set in his ways, to say the least. Whatever Nelson has decided is tried, true, and tough, he is devoutly sticking with it. No questions asked. It could be acid rain tomorrow, but if Nelson says a tin roof is the only way to go, you better believe that's what he's gonna roll with. His heart could be on his last leg. He's still gonna have bacon and sausage for breakfast and pork chops fried in lard for lunch and dinner. He's lived this long, right? Why change? But you bring up any little idea to tweak things and Nelson will have a fit. Nelson, maybe we should update the living room, baby. You know, to improve our aesthetic experience, or maybe up our vibration just a little bit. Change the mattress that we've had for 30 damn years. Do something about that Demodex population. Actually do something to help your back and your allergies and that little skin problem. Nope. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Nelson doesn't know what broke looks like. This man's whole life is broken in ways he's never considered or understood. Everything around him is falling apart in some way or another, but as long as he's not living in complete squalor or out on the street, he'll tell you he's fine. But fine does not mean healthy. And just because you're surviving does not mean you're thriving. Nelson has normalized all kinds of dysfunction. To him, the brokenness is the baseline or the way things are. He's the kind of man you could show that he's gotten his favorite Bible verse wrong, completely wrong. You know, the one he's built his whole belief system around. Bible verse right there in front of him, and he'd still argue with you. No, you're wrong. What's behind it? Fear. He's scared. Nelson is so afraid of the unknown that he has built an entire life around the belief that staying stuck is safer. He's convinced himself that he's in his place and that his place is where he belongs. But really, he's terrified of change because change can mean stepping into new challenges, and Nelson is tired. He doesn't believe he's worthy of better. He doesn't believe he's worthy of comfort or worthy of taking a chance on a better version of himself or a better life. Nelson doesn't know how stuck he is. He sees change as a threat. And any little suggestion of change is an absolute invasion into the life that he's carved out and into his place in this world. So he clings to the familiar and he will defend it with his life. Any attempt at improving his situation feels like an admission that he is not good enough.
So what is the real issue? I think we wear masks because they do work to a point, and they have worked for us in the past. They protected us when we were young, when we were vulnerable, and when we didn't feel we had much power. But now as adults, these masks can become prisons. You can't breathe behind them, you can't grow, and they can keep you from connecting with people in general. They can keep you from being the real you. But you deserve a life where you do not have to hide who you are in order to be safe and accepted or to be loved. So let's sit with this. What mask have you worn the longest? Who taught you to wear it and why? How has it helped you survive? And how is it hurting you now? Drop it in the comments. That is it for this one. You made it. I made it. And if it stirred something up, good. That means it mattered. Now go grab that suitcase. I know it's heavy, but let's unpack. This is the Unpacking Lab. Trauma dumping unapologetically. See you next time.